Where did you get started on this project? From what I read from your material, there are 8,000 Burmese refugees right now here in Buffalo.
Yes, it was a very interesting way that it began, and it turned out very differently than we expected. It started with conversations between Derek and a refugee by the name of Lai So, who's very prominent here and who is going back.
I met Law years ago, in probably 2008, when we did our first story about the burgeoning Burmese community here in Buffalo. At that time, it was small, but really exponentially growing, and so we took note of it, and I managed to make friends with Law, who is a photographer who documented some of the civil unrest in Burma in the Saffron Revolution in 2007. And he came to me and told me that he was going back, and I jokingly said, "Can I come too?" And he said, "Yes, you should." And so that got me thinking, and I did a little research and just made a brief pitch to our editor, Stan Evans, half expecting that I would get laughed out of his office. And to his credit, he scratched his chin and said, "Let's talk to Jerry."
And then I took a look at the story and did a little preliminary research and came to the conclusion that the story was much bigger than Lai So. It was a story about the largest population influx the Buffalo has seen in decades, and I thought that we would really have to report it as such. Originally, we did still plan to go back with Lai So, but we never got that visa to go into Burma with him, so we didn't quite do that. But we did end up meeting his father, actually, on our trip last spring.
So then you visited a village of a refugee who has settled here in Buffalo, correct?
Yes, we did.
And tell us about Nate, too. He is a 44-year-old gentleman. He is here living, working with his family here in Buffalo. How did he end up in Buffalo, New York?
He ended up in Buffalo, New York, like a lot of refugees do. He came here in 2010 and was resettled in New York City, looked around and said, "Oh my God, this place is not for me. I want to go somewhere where there are Karen people." He's a Karen refugee. He already had family in Buffalo. He talked to his caseworker in New York City, and after about a week in New York, the family moved to Buffalo.
But his story begins in a small village on the eastern side of Burma, in the Karen state, in a very, you know, this is a very rural agrarian society. These are communal villages. And when he was about 8 years old, the Burmese army came into his village and burned it down. And he literally had to flee with his family in the middle of the night. And that began his journey, which led him, you know, to join a rebel army to fight the Burmese government. It led him to flee the country and live in a refugee camp in Thailand, and eventually it you know, paved his road to come to Buffalo.
Well, and Jerry, you wrote that for Natu. He was living in a jungle, forest, caves before he came here. How do they flee to the refugee camps safely, so to speak, and then before they venture to the U.S.?
Usually they have help from one of the rebel groups who knows the way. And Natu was lucky because as a soldier, he knew that territory very, very well. The mountain range that separates that part of Burma from Thailand, where the refugee camps are, is very rugged. It would be very difficult to cross if you didn't know how to do it. That's what he did. It wasn't easy for the family at all. I think one of the more telling anecdotes in the story is about that 7-day last leg of their journey into Thailand, and the one child crying hysterically, and when the parents look to see why, it's because the child is just covered with fleas. And yet there was nothing they could do yet keep on going. Because they were living in the jungle, and those things happen when you're living in the jungle.
I mean, they're walking barefoot through thick jungle at night, sleeping in piles of leaves, foraging for food. I mean, these are obstacles that would kill most people living in Buffalo. The obstacles that they had to overcome are just unfathomable.
I think it really brings home the refugee crisis that's occurring and what we're seeing and why so many people are seeking their freedom here.
I think that's very much true. And I think that the refugee crisis in many ways is very misunderstood. It's very much understood right now in the moment of a heated presidential campaign. But people don't realize that the United States has had a law since 1980 that pretty much dictates that it's part of American policy and part of American values to accept refugees from all around the world. And that for most recent years, 70,000 refugees have come from all over the world to the United States, the largest group in the century coming from Burma.
You have to understand, too, that these are people who have encountered so much adversity in their lives. That they're here is a testament to their ability to survive. They really, to say that they're lucky to be alive is an understatement, because it's not by luck that they're here. It's through their hard work, through their perseverance, and through their amazing character that they're able to make it here. And we should, as a community, embrace them and the culture and the wonderful things that they bring to our city.
Some of the photos that you did show me on your iPhone really show the lifestyle that they're living together, and they walk through waters to get to one place to the next through rivers. It's pretty amazing, even driving vehicles through it.
Yeah, the one thing that I take away from this reporting and from this trip is how lucky we have it as a society to have roads and infrastructure, simple things like plumbing and sewage treatment. These are all things that we take for granted, and things that, you know, the basic services that we have here, they don't have there. This village and many of the villages that we went to, there's no running water, there's no water treatment, there's, you know, no plumbing. Food comes from the animals that they raise and the crops that they grow. It's really, it's like taking a step back in time.
What for either of you was most overwhelming and challenging during your visits?
Well, I would say the most overwhelming and challenging thing during the visit was getting it right in a very short period of time. We did not have a lot of time in the Mela refugee camp. We didn't have a lot of time in Kwiler Shu. There was a storm coming on in Kwiler Shu, and we didn't really feel like getting stuck there because we didn't have the provisions to be stuck there.
We were reminded that it was a two-day hike out if the roads became impassable, so that motivated us to get back to Thailand safely.
Exactly, and a rainstorm will make it such that you can't get back, because the streams that we drove through to get there would be a lot deeper after the rainstorm. So, yeah, that was the big challenge, was getting it right in a short period of time.
And I think language barriers were a real issue. It's hard to have a casual conversation with someone when you're speaking through a translator. And I think those difficulties helped us understand on a much smaller scale what, those refugees living in Buffalo have to encounter, what they have to overcome.
Things and secrets we don't know about that's happening from the government side that's not lending what you saw through your eyes and through your lens of the camera?
Oh, yeah. One thing that was secretive and that's dealt with in one of the stories on the first day of the series is this entire effort to bring the Burmese refugees here was secretive. When the United States struck the deal with Thailand to allow resettlement to start beginning from these camps in Thailand, there was a tacit agreement between the two governments not to publicize it. The Thai government insisted on this. The reason for that is what's called the pull factor. And the pull factor in refugee parlance is if it's well known that a better life may be attained in one place across the border, people will flee across the border. So Thailand was worried about being overwhelmed overrun by people from Burma. If people from Burma knew that they could resettle in the United States if they just got across the border to one of these camps. So the whole program was done on the quiet, and yet now it was by far the largest refugee resettlement of this century in America.
What have you learned of how they're persecuted?
We have learned an awful lot about how people were persecuted in Burma, both ethnic groups and political activists. And one thing I've noted and that we're taking a look at later in the series is the fact that there are a lot of psychological problems among the refugees even today because of what they've dealt with. We've interviewed people who lost limbs in a landmine. We've interviewed people who have PTSD. We interviewed a woman who saw her father shot by the Burmese army. We've interviewed a woman who was raped in the refugee camp. So the amount of difficulty and persecution that these people lived with before they came to Buffalo is just vast. You hear these stories from virtually every refugee you speak with, and it is one of the things that they have to deal with and contend with every day.
Burma is such a dramatically vast and diverse country, and the experiences of each of the ethnic groups are different, but they've all suffered persecution at the hand of the government.
How freely were they able to speak with you, though, feeling, you know, that you were American reporters there, your safety and how they responded and reacted to you when you were trying to cover them as a story?
I was very surprised at how open people were in Karen State. In the areas that are really heavily influenced by the Karen National Union. People there told me very bluntly that they affiliate with the KNU. They don't feel like that they're part of Burma. And they were very freely, openly speaking about this. I thought they would be afraid given the history there, but they weren't.
And in other parts of the country, too, I was impressed not only with the level of openness, but I was impressed by the level of pro-democracy activities that we saw. We were there before this landmark election in November of 2015, and the excitement was palpable. You could feel that this was a country that was changing for the better, and there was an excitement there that I think people were eager to share.
You know, the trip to Burma is very exciting. It's audacious for the Buffalo News to do this sort of thing, but this is really a hugely important Buffalo story, and that's why we're doing it. This is a story about a wave of people who are coming in here and ending the drop in population for the first time in 50 years. So it's not really a story over there. It's the here and now, and it's part of the Buffalo comeback story.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in and talking about your fascinating and tremendous trip to Burma. We appreciate so much that you're sharing this story with our audience as well, and we look forward to more and many articles and the great photos.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.